Colorado, and Denver in particular, is quickly becoming known as one of the premier hotspots for innovation and entrepreneurship in the U.S. What is it about the Rockies and the Front Range that has created the perfect melting pot for innovation in business, government, education, and nonprofit? In this episode, Reese and Aaron interview Eric Matisik, an icon in the Denver community and, among many other notable achievements, the co-founder of Denver Startup Week, about what makes Denver's entrepreneurial scene special, how crucial it is to be a four-sport athlete in innovation, and his ideas for how to solve the state of Colorado's biggest challenges. You're listening to Power in Motion, a podcast where two old friends converse about business, politics, sports, and life in an attempt to make a meaningful impact in their small corner of the world. This is episode number 15, recorded Friday, February 19th, 2021.
Aaron, what are we doing here, my friend?
I want you to notice a little wardrobe change for me this evening. I've done every episode of Power in Motion with little crappy Apple earbuds. I'm now rocking some Beats headphones like all the kids do these days, and I think I look the part of a podcast producer.
Wait, are those the Beats headphones you wear when you lose at Madden to your dad?
Hey, let me just say, I did play my dad in Madden once. I don't know if we talked about this on the show. I did lose pretty horrifically. Now,
wait, did you really lose?
Oh, I lost big time. And let me just say, it's because he played as the Kansas City Chiefs. And so when you're Mahomes dropping 90-yard bombs to Tyreek Hill, you're going to win all day long.
Sweet. Is your dad just sitting there with your mom like, hey, we got to practice and playing Aaron again? You know?
He decided to retire after his one victory, and our new strategy, the new game we're playing, is PGA. We figure a nice game of golf is a little more relaxing. It's not so uptight. We can take a shot, go drink some coffee, take another shot. Much more casual.
But is he claiming, like, Tiger? Hey, I got to beat Tiger circa 2002. So, you know, it's the same thing with the Chiefs.
I'll tell you what, he's practicing and he's playing me hard. Initially, he came up with all these algorithms on how many strokes I had to give him based on all these wild variables. We've plowed through that pretty heftily, and now we're just playing straight matches. And I'll tell you what, more often than not, he's either hanging there right with me or he's beating me. So I got some sports work to do. I am a great example of the sports scene in Denver, Colorado right now.
And is that because you're sitting in your basement playing video games with your dad?
That's right. That's right. Von Miller, could you, I figure, just kidding, Von, I love you. Please come back. No, it's fair. It's a fair question. I used to be quite the gamer, Reese, but as I have grown into an adult, I have lost some of the sharpness that I was once known for in my teenage years. Well, dear listeners, we have a very special guest on today's show. If you've spent any time in the Denver and Colorado business communities, you've heard of him. In addition to having served as the chief executive for numerous companies, he is formerly CEO of the Colorado Technology Association, CIO for the state of Colorado, and co-founder of both the Commons on Champa and Denver Startup Week. You can currently find him as the CEO of Highwing, the world's first open data platform for commercial insurance. Eric Matisik, it is such a pleasure to have you on the show today. Welcome to Power in Motion.
Thanks, Aaron. Absolute pleasure to be here, and really excited to take some time to talk about all things tech innovation in Colorado.
That was wonderful. Well, that's a good place to start, Eric. Reese and I, both Colorado natives, some of the few remaining, and as such, having participated in the business community here, having participated in entrepreneurship stretching all the way back to our days at the University of Denver, I'm curious to start there, start with our beloved Colorado, Denver in particular. When you look at the startup scene here, the scene of tech innovation, new business, new venture, and you compare that to other similar scenes around the country, in the Valley, on the East Coast. I'm curious to get your thoughts over all your years. What has made Denver and Colorado stand apart from other communities that would try and stack up against it?
Colorado is, you know, far and away a unique innovation and technology ecosystem in the United States. When you think about a lot of the core drivers that a lot of measurement or activity usually get compared to, it's always a question of how much capital was invested there, what companies are anchoring the community, industry or from a velocity perspective, like the amount of talent that's surrounding, you know, those industries. Those are usually kind of the core high level metrics that get stacked up to say this one's better than the other. What you don't get in the quantitative metrics is the real value around the humanity that lives in place. Governor John Hickenlooper used to say a lot, he had this term called topophilia, which is love of place. And as three Colorado natives, I think all three of us can agree that I've never had an address or file my taxes outside of the state. I love this place and I'm a topomaniac. And I think when you think about the innovation community here, we're so blessed because there's this incredible Colorado feeling around our community and pride in how we treat one another, pride in how we're generous with one another, pride in how founders help founders, and pride in how there's a collective value to win, which I think really separates us. I think the opportunity that all boats rise and to watch founders win, regardless of industry and regardless of company, is really, really powerful. And I just, time after time after time, I think it really defines us, is that the collective power of the founder value and kind of the core founder support in our community is unmatched. And I think that it's really led by some of the work that, you know, I think Techstars coined early on around give first. That's alive and well, and really, really a fabric of how we operate. But beyond giving first is just really that kindness and generosity to build high growth, powerful, you know, great shareholding returning businesses, but doing it in a way that's different in Colorado style.
Eric, I'm curious, as you talk about this, you know, topophilia, and you think about that in concert with the tech exodus that's happening in Silicon Valley, you know, New York City, these other expensive cities to live in, particularly with, you know, the fact that now people can work digitally and remotely. Can we keep that, you know, unique culture that you talk to, and how does that change, particularly as you see more and more companies, you know, come into the Boulder, Denver, you know, Colorado area?
It's a really great question, because it's something I think that, you know, those of us have been around here for a long time have been debating a lot lately, because what makes us good now may not keep us good long-term. And, you know, the great thing about communities is they evolve with the opportunities and the people and talent that really start to take hold and start to define and build those. And so even if you look back to 2000, you know, we've had, you know, three or four or five rebirths of leadership, of companies that matter, of, you know, businesses that have really, you know, defined our city. And today, when you look at the companies, and you look at companies like Guild Education, or you look at a lot of the investments that Vista Equity has made, both in security and kind of core, you know, enterprise software space, or you look, you know, as Techstars, you know, being founded here in our great state, like, we've got these pillar businesses that have a lot of those same vibes and values. But you pose a great question, like, you know, if we continue down the path where this becomes such an awesome place to live, do you start to, you know, attract those who really, you know, could impact the way that we move forward? And I really believe that we're all a fabric of the community that we live in. And as long as we all hold true that this is a place that you can build a great business, that we're incredibly inclusive and equitable in the way we approach our community, that, you know, founders and community leaders all are here to help one another, you know, build businesses. We're kind, we're connective, we're generous. If those continue to lead the way, even if you didn't show up with all those values, you're not going to be able to be part of the community if you don't adopt them. And so I just truly believe that, you know, abundance is the rule of the day. And if there's more of us that believe that generosity and kindness and the ability to expand our community and bring all walks of life and all brains and all types of companies to Colorado is the most powerful path, I think we can keep the culture what it is, because, again, you can't be part of the community if you don't adopt the values. And as long as we keep those values strong, even those who don't have it initially, they're going to warm up to it, and they're going to realize how awesome it is when they're part of it.
Eric, touching on something Reese said, you know, as we step into this post-COVID world, if you will, where more and more organizations are spread out throughout the world, there is the sense of digitization of lifestyle and work style. Curious to touch on something near and dear, certainly to our hearts, even more so to yours, and that was this past year in 2020 was the first all-remote version of Denver Startup Week. Obviously, Ryan Harris was a great MC. Mayor Michael Hancock and Robert Smith of Vista were great opening keynotes. Curious to hear your thoughts on how the first all-remote DSW went from your perspective, and, you know, what did you take away from a new experience there?
Denver Startup Week from the beginning has always been about a program that was for the community, by the community, for the future of community, to support entrepreneurs building great businesses in our city and state. This year, 2020, when we think about what changed, it was just truly a story of the awesomeness of the Colorado innovation community. Poised early in March with the notion that we were entering a pandemic, We had to completely rethink, like every other organization and, you know, out there, what we would do. We made an early decision that we would go 100% virtual, and the community just completely adapted. And I think with much trepidation, we were like, how's this going to work? Is it going to financially work? Will our sponsors commit? Like, do all the things that make Startup Week work well happen? And we were incredibly surprised at A, the turnout. We had over 200 sessions that were all digitally recorded on Zoom, hundreds and hundreds of hours of advice and input across all the walks of our core tracks within Startup Week. Our sponsors responded. You know, they fully funded the program last year and were excited to participate in this kind of new virtual arena. And I think we learned a lot at scale. I mean, when we think about the opening keynote, we giggle because, you know, we broke Zoom. You know, it was one of those things like it was a time that we're trying to, you know, get Robert Smith and the mayor and everything working perfectly. And, you know, we're on for 3 minutes and the entire Denver Startup Week goes to dark. And then we had to come back and we didn't make any other errors the balance of the week. And we worked with Zoom and figured all the elements out. And it was just an awesome learning experience. But I think the real gift when we think about Denver Startup Week 2020, for the first time in the history of the event, we have 200 pieces of free content that live on denverstartupweek.org and on YouTube that anybody from around the world can dip into, can search, can look at and be like, I need to know about diversity issues in fast growing companies. I need to know about how to build the perfect UX for my next mobile app. It's all there. And we're going to do it again. And we're going to figure out ways to continue to spread, you know, the value and showcase the great companies in Colorado. But what we thought could have been a really big challenge ended up being one of the greatest gifts for our innovation community here in Colorado. And not only for Colorado, but we've got thousands of listeners. I think we had every state participate with the exception of two. And we had listeners around the globe tune into Denver Startup Week. So it completely turned kind of the plan that we had on its head. And the outcome was far better than we could have expected.
Eric, as you're talking about Denver Startup Week, what does the future look like, particularly coming out, you know, hopefully things continue to go well with vaccine distribution, things like that, and we can get back to in-person events. Is it a hybrid model, fully in-person, virtual? And by the way, follow-up question, I'm also curious, what are the two states that didn't tune in?
Can we get that on record?
I plead is. So when we look ahead with Denver Startup Week, we're evaluating right now exactly the structure this year. I mean, I think we're going to still have a predominantly virtual conference this year. We're going to figure out ways, you know, of course, you know, safe and appropriately and within the guidelines of the state and the city to be able to gather. If there's one thing we learned from Denver Startup Week, the biggest learning we had is the software at the time. So, you know, September 2020, there was not a solution yet to be able to create human relationships online. So the content was amazing. The videos were awesome. Everything about the event from a learning perspective or education perspective, I think was fully intact, maybe even better because they were prepared and people were ready to be on video. Everyone really missed the interaction at the community level. I think we all really missed that, even more so today. So I think as we think about Denver Startup Week 2021, we're going to be very thoughtful of how we make sure we can capture that content to share globally with the entrepreneur and innovation community, highlighting the best of Denver. But most importantly, we're going to find creative ways for us to have much more connective engagement this year and really bring some of those elements back to life as we kind of dip through and come back up into what will be the new environment here in Denver.
Eric, shifting a little bit into your background, obviously, not to put too fine a point on it, you are one of the most well-known names in Denver today, especially anybody involved in technology and entrepreneurship. Having looked at your career where you have been in private sector, gone into public sector, back into private sector, curious as you can, you know, kind of look back across the scope of your career thus far, and most curious if you could identify what are maybe some of the surprising nuances or differences that you've seen in applying your skills and traits public sector versus private sector here in Denver and Colorado.
I think I've been incredibly blessed. I often refer to my experience and resume as one of the rare four sport athletes in industry, having worked in academia, having run private companies and been part of private businesses, having served in government and having run a nonprofit. The one lesson in learning across all those is that they're all dynastically different. And a lot of times it's easy to pin one against the other, especially when you're trying to work with organizations that are not similar. I feel like I've got an incredible ability to be empathetic, to understand the landscapes and the motivational mechanisms within each of those four, kind of core industries. And most importantly, the same thing is true in every single one of them. Leadership matters most. And whether it's a great nonprofit, whether it's a great, you know, governor, whether it's a great startup, or whether it's an incredible university, leadership is the equalizer. Like those places where leadership lives, you have greatness. Those places where leadership lacks or is light, you don't. And so I think the ability to, understand and empathize the motivational activities amongst those, you know, kind of four arenas, and then really apply the same leadership activities as it relates to collaboration, as it relates to building teams of value, as it relates to figuring out how to mobilize large ideas in places that might be under-resourced and, you know, have the opportunity to be great. Those exist everywhere. Whether you're in a private company, an early stage startup, a nonprofit, government, or in academia, you're likely under-resourced. You likely have really big ideas, and you likely want to do something great. And so, you know, the ability to figure that out is the same across all of those. The levers are a little bit different, but I think at the core, understanding that humans are amazing and that leadership matters. Is really the equalizer, and finding yourself in a situation where you surround yourself with great leaders, learn from them, apply your learnings from them, and aspire to be them. That's just, regardless of what career you choose, you're going to be successful.
Eric, I love this idea of the four sport athlete, and particularly with the lens of the Colorado native, which, by the way, I don't think in the history of Colorado there's ever been three natives on one phone call together. So we'll have to double check that.
We should have charged tickets for this.
This is like Topomaniac Central.
Exactly. However, double clicking into this, I'm really curious. So as we think about, and particularly issues that hit home to us here in Colorado. So for example, infrastructure, we've all sat on I-70 traffic, things like that. As you think about being this four sport athlete, particularly with innovation and stuff like that, how can we take some of the lessons learned there and apply it against some of these like hard to move issues that affect our daily lives, you know, like infrastructure?
So I had the opportunity to be a participant in a handful of those when I served John Hickenlooper. Predominantly one of those was, you know, really trying to recognize, you know, Colorado as one of the cyber capitals of the United States. And I would tell you that solving those big problems is all about trying to seek the greatest minds, bringing them around the table, and then, you know, giving them the credit where credit is due for their contributions to the project and the program. And so when I think about even the work that we did with the National Cybersecurity Center early on, Governor Hickenlooper was the fastest to hand out credit across the group when we brought together Mayor Southers and an incredible portfolio of leaders to really stand up the center in Colorado Springs. It was like this barn raising of a project where the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs had, you know, deep involvement. The University of Denver had deep involvement. Regis was involved. You had, the Air Force Academy. You had, the U.S. Army. You had, the Air Force. You just had this amazing group of folks that all really rallied around the development of this, all equally involved, all equally motivated, and all equally incentivized to be part of it. And I think when we think about the biggest issues that are facing Colorado, I think if we approach those with the same thinking, we will do amazing things for our state. And I think that mobility is going to be an issue. Water is going to be an issue. We can see it. We understand it. But I think in this new world, I think there's such an opportunity to figure out now that, you know, when you think about the dynamics of what happened with this kind of work at home, tryout that we've had the last year. If you look at work at home now as a currency, the ability to solve these things at scale become really, really interesting. Like just the notion of saying, okay, great. Maybe I separate industries, and these industries on Tuesdays and Thursdays work at home till 10. These industries on Tuesdays and, you know, on Wednesdays and Fridays work at home till 9, or, you know, like understanding the traffic patterns using our new 5G networks and really being able to kind of understand mobility and modes of transit and make recommendations around that. I mean, there's an entirely new way to think about we're specifically talking about mobility and commuting, but there's an entirely different paradigm when we include the right people. And I think the magic is working across that kind of sport, that four sport arena, taking the best private sector ideas, putting them inside of a university campus to be able to be, you know, really thought about and turned over and engaged upon, exposing those to government to be able to mobilize and fund and engage and authorize. And then effectively looking at the nonprofit realm to say, what are the other areas that we can provide research and data and information to optimize? When those things are together in a public-private partnership, you have the best projects. And I think Colorado has always been a laboratory for democracy. And if there's a strong characteristic of our community at large, is it's the ability to collaborate and solve really big problems. And I think we did it with Fast Tracks once upon a time. We did it just last year with Energize Colorado, and more broadly, the COVID response. When you look at the depth of COVID response statewide, operated out of Department of Health and Jared Polis's office and Mayor Hancock's office, and then each city level across the state, it's miraculous. But it all happened through those humbly showing up, lowering their guard, giving credit where credit was due, and being authentic to helping Colorado. And we moved amazing rocks for the citizens here. And I think that's going to be our story. So as these big things come up, I hope that we continue to collaborate in that same fashion.
Eric, touching again on, I love that notion of the four sport athlete and how important it is for the different sports, if you will, to not pit one another against the others. Curious what you would say to the one sport athlete who believes that their particular spot, their private sector entrepreneurship, their involvement in government, what have you, is their sole way to contribute, and all the other sports are merely actors of a different play on a different stage. Does everybody have sort of the individual role they need to play, or should everybody strive to be the four sport athlete here?
I think perspective in life is one of the most important things that you can acquire over the course of your career. And if anything, working across different industries, being able to look and walk in the shoes of a nonprofit and walk in the shoes of a university chancellor, and understanding the motivations and the metrics that they're measured by to succeed, I don't ever think it's a bad idea to go really deep in understanding the partnerships that can expand your success. And so when I think about that private sector expert that is the best aerospace private company in the state, we'll just go with Boom Aerospace because I love them. When you look at Boom Aerospace as a business, it's a really good example of a private company that has incredible opportunity to work across the public sector because they need lots of FAA approvals to fly aircraft at the speed of sound, lots of nonprofit support because they need to understand, how this new industry really impacts, the aviation unions and the core functionality of the industry. But most importantly, academia, when you look at the technology or the innovation that's going to drive these industries, partnering with universities to be able to power the next generation of aviation technology becomes really, really critical. And you've got to have the brightest minds really focused with research funding to turn those things out. And so I think that having perspective and always looking for where you can bring people to the table that can add value to the overall solution is valuable. And if I was that one sport athlete that was best in the world, I would only think I could sharpen my game if I figured out and understood and empathized more with how, the other organizations around me worked.
Eric, switching gears a little bit, but also staying in the same line, we've talked about this four sport athlete, one of those being, this university space. The three of us all had the privilege to attend the University of Denver. Aaron and I recorded on one of our recent podcast episodes about what is the ROI of business school, particularly, you look at the rising cost of education, you look at, schools right now or currently going to, a digital model. Let's assume we get past that. But, post-pandemic leadership, a lot of those skills you learn in business school are going to look very different. You've obviously been one of the co-founders of Project Excite, which is at DU. So I'm curious to get your thoughts with that intimate knowledge, not only being an alumni, but also co-founder of Project Excite. Thoughts on the ROI of school? What is the benefit, particularly as we look post-pandemic?
I think when you look at higher education in general, I think the foot race over the course of the next decade is really around the speed to market and relevancy of content as it relates to talent or market need around talent in the industries that students are graduating into and wanting to work. Really simply said, the gap sometimes between those who are teaching in the classroom and what's actually happening in companies and the skill that are needed to provide value in business, sometimes that gap can be wide. I think it's the responsibility of the great institutions from a higher educational perspective to relentlessly shorten that gap and not only provide the overall education that's relevant, that's in time with what the market needs, but I also think it's when, as you see education starting to be component or, you know, broke apart into different pieces, I think higher education, you'll see an entirely new set of models and tools that they'll develop either by themselves or co-develop with partners that start to take skills and package them alongside of, you know, knowledge, AKA I'm a marketing expert. Within marketing, I might have an SEO component or a brand component that I can quickly pull off the shelf. I just think there's gonna be a lot of innovation there. And the institutions, in my opinion, that are gonna lead are the ones that close the gap between what skills are required at the desk immediately when a student graduates and provide a multitude of ways to consume that content, either piecemeal or over a four-year experience, that are highly relevant and highly timely. And the ones who pursue that and are most effective, they're not going anywhere. The ones who continue to stay in a 3 or 5 or 7 year leg, or they just talk about philosophy or the core, you know, high level elements of the individual discipline, they're going to have a lot harder challenge, in my opinion.
Erica, you know, innovation is something that everybody talks about until they're blue in the face. Obviously, in the private sector and probably in the other sectors as well, it takes on all these different forms of expanding new product sets and business lines, trying to do something fundamentally different than what we did 5 years ago, trying to make a bigger impact in the community. I recently had a colleague of mine tell me that he felt that there were 10 companies in the entire world who could say that they did, quote unquote, innovation well. After all these years, all these experiences, when you hear somebody, regardless of the sport that they happen to play in, saying that they want to be innovative in their particular discipline, their particular line of work, what is your philosophy for coaching that individual on how to do innovation well?
I think innovation, most importantly, starts with the mindset at the executive level of a business, period. And it starts with the ability to say that we have the ability to dream and think really big. We have the authority to fail. So if our ideas, as big as they may be, if they don't work out, that's an acceptable activity within our company. And we prioritize progress and we prioritize a new way of doing business or reinventing ourselves at the highest level. I think the organizations that you see that are most innovative, they're driven with that mindset from the very top. And when that is happening in the executive sphere of a business, it's natural that when those functions of reward or those structures permeate an organization, that you're going to have your entry level or your mid level or your senior level leaders emulating that same behavior. I think when you look at some of the greatest innovators that have both succeeded and failed, it's easy to point at just a really public one like Amazon, where the Amazon Fire being a complete failure, while Amazon Prime being one of the greatest success stories of modern membership, design or structure. In there, when you dig deep, there's as much in the graveyard from ideas in the world of Amazon as there's as much as we read about. And I think having that aptitude and that risk profile to be able to take calculated risk, not just bet the company on something for the sake of innovating, but being calculated, I think is most important. But I also just think that mindset is mission critical. And I think there's those companies that have those leaders that really believe that is the path to drive the industry. And I also think in the same industries, there's those companies that have leaders that believe in innovation is a component of their strategy, but they don't wake up and demonstrate and reflect and emulate the core characteristics of an innovator. And those who work in a company are going to look to the leaders that lead the firm for direction. And if they don't see them being innovative, they're not going to innovate. And I think that's the mission critical thing for companies that want to be innovative, is really making sure that the executive leadership team at the top is really doing what they say, walking the walk, taking the risks, reporting back to the organization, and giving credit and accolades to those who are actually doing it.
So as we talk about some of these lessons learned, so to speak, throughout your career and everything, one of the things that we focus on here often is mistakes Aaron and I have made in the past, and tips and tricks we would give for young and emerging leaders. As you look back on your career, Eric, what would be one or two pieces of advice that you would say as a young emerging leader, areas that you should focus on, think about, just different contexts for young leaders?
The number one piece of advice I would like to give, like a younger version of myself, is just not to be so serious. I think it's so easy early in your career to think that every single meeting, every single title, every single pay raise, every single presentation is just like the end all be all binary activity. If it's really good, my career is going to the moon. If it's, you know, if it doesn't meet the mark, oh, I'm devastated. I'm going to be stuck in this job forever. And I feel like early on in my career, I had this just deep imposter syndrome when I would be put into roles and I was just so serious. And I think life is long. Our careers are long. And I think that the ability to you know, not take life seriously, you know, to know that you're going to get a second crack. But most importantly, if you don't, the world is going to give you something if you're putting in the work and you're doing something that you love. And so for me, I just think that, you know, I probably could have saved myself a few sleepless nights, a bunch of anxiety and a bunch of Vivarin if I didn't, if I just took the edge off a touch.
Eric, obviously, on your many, you know, websites and pages elsewhere, one of the values that you seem to exhibit and that you describe in great detail is grit, right? This sort of forward motion in the face of adversity and just having the ability to get knocked down and get back up again. Grit is something that we've talked about in the past, and we'd always like to look at values on Power in Motion as a function of what can our listeners do with that. Do you feel that grit, insofar as you've experienced it, as you've seen others experience it very well, is it a characteristic or a skill that can be learned over time? Do some people just innately have it? If somebody is told to develop their grit to be able to go through adversity and difficult situations and press onward, is that something that they can do?
I don't think there's a human out there that wakes up and says, I want to develop my grit. Developing grit requires sacrifice. It requires hardship. It requires, in many times, heartbreak. It requires you to lose something. It requires you to step up to something that you weren't prepared to do. Grit, by definition, to me, are the unexpected things that allow the power of humanity and the power of yourself to rise up and meet the expectation. And nobody would anticipate or want someone in their life to pass away. Nobody would want to get, you know, violently fired from their job. Nobody would want to be publicly embarrassed for their performance. Like, there's not anyone going out in the world trying to get gritty. Like, you just don't want to get gritty. But when it happens, it's the greatest moment to be able to bind that up, be self-reflective, understand what occurred, and just in the face of all the pain, all the tragedy, or all the ability that I might not be able to go forward, to just press on. And I just think grit is the most powerful like power plant for entrepreneurs, because 90% of the time when you're building a company, things are breaking and going wrong and you just don't think it's going to work until it does. And the minute you give up along that path and the minute you stop, you give up and you don't even give it the opportunity to succeed. One of the things that I always keep in mind is that there was a quote that I once came across that I can't be pessimistic because my mind doesn't have enough knowledge of what's ahead. And I just always keep that really close, that pessimism only exists because you don't have enough knowledge to know optimism. And the brain doesn't have enough knowledge to know optimism. And that's how I feel about grit. In the moment of grittiness, you're in despair and you're hopeless and it sucks, but you don't have the knowledge of what's ahead. You don't have the knowledge of the new opportunity, the new person in your life, the new way of you know, applying knowledge that you just learned. And when you get up and move forward and don't stop, the doors start to open and it becomes revealed. And that's where we find the power to succeed.
All right, Eric, wrapping up here with arguably our most important / hardest hitting question of the evening. For those of you who don't know, Eric grew up on the Western Slope here in Colorado, home to some of the best mountain bike trails in the state. And so what is your favorite mountain bike trail here in the state? And do you still get out and ride quite a bit?
I love mountain biking. And I have young kids all under the age of 10. And so my mountain biking activity has not been as prevalent in the last few years, but there's two things that I'm really excited about. One little native secret, if you heard it here, don't all race there because I'll be really upset. But Rattlesnake Canyon, I think to this day is one of the preeminent secrets of Colorado. And those who want to bike in and see the second largest collection of natural arches in the world, go do it. It's epic. What's on deck, which I'm really excited for, is a place called the Palisade Plunge. The Palisade Plunge is going to be the longest downhill plunge in, I don't know if it's the United States or in the world. We'll just call it the world because we're here. But 27 miles of downhill mountain biking from the top of the Grand Mesa all the way into Peach Country and Palisade to end your day with a nice glass of Palisade whiskey after a treacherous ride. So get out there, do it. Two of the greatest tracks out there, and have fun.
I feel like Power in Motion is quickly becoming the podcast in which natives accidentally expose a bunch of secrets and then fervently ask people, please don't swamp our secrets.
Amazing.
Well, as we like to do on Power in Motion, we always wrap up our conversation with one next step. That's a time for us to really just reflect and consider, gosh, out of everything that we've talked about and everything that we've dug through in a particular episode, what is the one next thing, the one thing that we want to carry forward with intention and energy into our life? Reese, why don't you kick us off, bud?
I think after having this conversation, really appreciate the time today, Eric. I take two things away. One, I loved your comment about grit. It's one of the things that I think about on a regular basis, but specifically the quote of like, I know over the last year in particular, there's been a day or two where I might've been slightly pessimistic. And so just making sure that you're pushing through and continually, you know, understanding that, hey, you know, it's going to get better on the backside of things. And the other thing I take away from this is the comment about innovation, right? Of, hey, I think it's easy to think about and say, hey, we want to be innovative or we are innovative, but it's different, as you point out, of like the amount of things that are in the graveyard, which actually means you tried them, right? So making sure you're intentional and thoughtful about trying it. And that's something that I can take away directly in my current role. I know, you know, with my team in terms of, you know, how do we take a look at, you know, whether it's our operating cadence, how we do things, different things like that, and constantly try new things and, you know, try and continually push the envelope on being innovative. What about you, Aaron?
You know, I'm really struck again. I love how every episode we seem to have some sort of phrase that coalesces a thought or train of thinking that I hadn't thought of before. And for me, this time around, it is the four sport athlete. I love that notion. Long time I've been hyper focused on private sector. That's what I've done. As I think about, you know, my family situation prior to John Southers being the mayor of Colorado Springs, my dad was the mayor of Colorado Springs. I got a sense for what city government and the civics and energy related for that involves. Breeze, you and I have talked a lot and been involved a lot with the University of Denver over the years. It strikes me that there is opportunity for we who might ply our wares, our talents, our abilities into multiple streams of society rather than, not maliciously, but maybe just myopically in day-to-day life getting sort of sucked into the one thing that we keep doing every day. Man, there's a lot of opportunities to utilize the skills and the attributes and the conversations that we get from one into the other. And I, you know, Eric, because I'm my take away from what you said, for the person who is maybe wise enough to be the Rosetta Stone between all of these different sectors, there is a lot of great opportunity, not just for ourselves, but to help a lot of other people. And I'm really encouraged by that. Eric, you obviously shared all of this with us. You're doing a lot of these things. So what is the one thing that you're most excited about? One thing that you can feel comfortable sharing here? What is the one thing right now that you think about, man, I go in on Monday, I'm ready to roll and I'm looking forward to it?
I'm most excited about what we're building in High Wing. High Wing is an amazing Colorado story. And what makes High Wing so special is that we're a 15-person team that in my career, I don't think we've been able to put together a better collection of humans to build and tackle an industry problem at scale and have a tremendous amount of fun, appreciation, and celebration while we're doing it. And I get up every morning completely jazzed to step in the office and, you know, not only solve a big solution for an industry that's meaningful, you know, in the U.S., but most importantly, the team I get to work with. And that's what gets me most excited.
That's awesome. Well, Eric, thank you so much. I know you do a lot of these type of things. It is an absolute pleasure to sit down with an icon and a wonderful example of grit, of strategy, of thinking, of wisdom, of passion, energy, compassion, all the wonderful skills brought together into one individual, and our beloved city, our beloved state is incredibly better for it. Thank you so much for spending time with us. It's a pleasure having you here.
Thank you very much, Eric.
Thank you. Thank you. Absolute pleasure. And never stop, never stopping. Get out there.
You've been listening to Power in Motion. Keep up with the show on Twitter by following Motion_podcast. And if you get a minute, please rate and review the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.